Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It is January 21st, 2022. With me today is Senator Bishop, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Olson is online, Senator Witalkowski, Senator Wilson will be here momentarily, Senator Hoffman is excused. And today's agenda, we're going to start our budget discussions. We're going to have Mr. Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget. He's going to do a presentation today. He has some lifelines with him in case we give him too many tough questions. But we're going to talk about revenue and some of the changes. We'll have brief at ease. Back online, and just as we're getting some feedback, so please, those that are online, if they can make sure their phone is muted, we'd appreciate that. I think Senator, we have Senator Hoffman, he's online, Senator Olson's online, so we have the full committee is paying attention here to the presentation today, even though there's a couple of empty chairs. With that, I'd like to go ahead and call forward Director of Office of Management and Budget, who's been here many times. If you could, Mr. Steininger, just, if you're going to be by yourself, just slide in the middle. There you go. And go ahead and walk us through the presentation. We'll do what we normally do. We'll let you do a slide at a time. When you complete the slide, if there's questions, I'll queue up the committee members for the question. And I'll watch the clock. We have an hour and a half. So please take us through your budget outlook.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. Thank you for inviting me to the committee this morning to talk about the Governor's FY23 budget proposal. Primarily today, I'll be talking about the operating budget with some highlights from the capital budget. To start off, I'd like to talk a little bit about the high-level changes to the state's budget over the term of this administration from fiscal year 2019 through our proposal for fiscal year 2023. During that time, there's been a slight decline in traditional revenue based on the December 15th fall revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue. Roughly flat POMV draw available for government, but a fairly large change in the other adjustments, which I'll get to on a later slide when I break down the revenue used to pay for this fiscal year 23 budget. On the expenditure side, however, we've had a reduction of about 5.1% in overall unrestricted general fund spending between fiscal year 19 and 23. That came both from the operating budget and a very small change in the capital budget. In the operating budget, primarily we've seen a very large reduction in statewide operations. This mostly comes from a reduction in the state's obligation to retirement system payments. In agency operations, you see about a 2.2% reduction over that time, representing quite a number of different initiatives to control cost growth in agency operations over the last several years. At the bottom line, though, you can see that in fiscal year 19, we had a near $500 million deficit in the fiscal year 19 budget. And in this fiscal year 2023 proposal, you can see that there's no deficit or proposed draw from savings.
You want to just highlight why there's a revenue difference?
Yes, Chair Stedman. So primarily the revenue difference here is under other adjustments. So you see other adjustments on fiscal summaries in the past. Normally it just reflects carry forward of appropriations from prior years. However, in both 22 and 23, there are a couple of different revenue adjustments that we normally don't see, and that's just a reflection of sort of the different types of revenue available to the state right now. So we have a significant amount of money available through ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, through the Community, State, and Local Fiscal Relief Fund, sometimes referred to as SLRF. And that revenue can be used to replace revenue lost due to COVID. And so in both 22 and proposed for 23, some of that has been used as unrestricted general fund revenue to support state operations.
So we'll be having that unwound here at the table and coming attractions, I guess. So can you give us just a rough idea what we should expect to see when we pull out these federal funds and actually start looking at our reoccurring revenue against reoccurring expenditures? Because the COVID money isn't ongoing in perpetuity.
Chair Stedman, in fiscal year 23, that's $375.4 million used as unrestricted general fund revenue in the operating budget. There's other use of one-time federal dollars or ongoing federal dollars that have come through various federal appropriation packages.
Okay, so I've asked the committee staff and Ledge Finance to unwind this for us, so we'll be having those presentations. My expectation is the number is going to be somewhere around $450 million change. There's the funds that were reflected here just a moment ago by the budget director, and then there's some other ones. So the budget, although it's showing a surplus here, it is, but it is not. In other words, it is in balance. But once you back out some of these federal funds issue, we still have this underlying structural deficit. And I've asked the committee aides and Ledge Finance that we're going to be looking at what is our structural deficit after we take out these federal monies and we change the oil price from 80 to 60 or 55, and we'll have that discussion here at the table. We're going to try to stress test it so we can see kind of where we're at. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. I also see the line that says agency operations for fiscal year 23 is $3.9 billion. And I think just looking at the calculation, that's about a 2 to 2.5% inflation rate from 2022 enacted. Have you stress tested that with different inflation rates to see how that affects the bottom line?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I do have another slide a little bit later that goes into a lot more detail on the change from 22 to 23 within the operating budget. There are increases in agency or in statewide operations and agency formula, and some decreases in agency operations. So that, that change and kind of, stress testing the inflation would be different based on different types of spending for the state.
Follow up.
Thank you. So definitely want to take a look at that slide. Just a reminder, though, with agency operations, I can't recall, our employee labor costs, particularly with salary and health care costs, embedded in each agency, or did you round that up to Department of Administration? I can't remember.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, so the cost for, like an individual employee's, COLA adjustment negotiated with the union, that that lives within that agency budget, wherever that individual is employed, as well as contribution to healthcare for that employee. So we've seen, for different bargaining units, we have seen, you know, cost of living adjustments agreed to with those bargaining units. And we also have an increase in the rate for Alaska Care in this budget, and that's all incorporated in that $3.9 billion number.
Last question. Thank you. So when we get to that slide then, so when you point out the agencies where there will be reductions, my feeling is there'll have to be greater reductions than actually listed to offset the significant increase potential for insurance, for health care, for cost of living. So agency operations, programs will need to be adjusted, I would think, because I think this is a very ongoing, live type of change as we see roll out in front of us. Just something to think about.
Senator Bishop, did you have a question?
I'll just save mine to the capital budget when we get in that portion of the slide deck.
Other questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll jump on to slide number two.
And so, you know, moving more towards, you know, development of the fiscal year 23 budget, we had a handful of objectives as we put our budget together. First was the 50-50 dividend package that, you know, as part of a constitutional amendment, we reflected that proposal in our budget by reserving half of the percent of market value draw for dividends and only using the other half for state operations. We also sought to put forward a fiscal year 23 operating budget that addressed baseline needs and priorities to ensure, you know, safe environment for individuals and businesses. This both includes public protection, but as well as, you know, business permitting and development of resource development and support of those, you know, those items that are, you know, important for, you know, a safe environment for individuals and businesses. We also have several proposals that are working towards efficiency and operational change within state government. So you'll see structure changes throughout the budget that reflect trying to do things a little bit differently in order to hopefully result in better outcomes. We also utilized fiscal year 22 surplus as well as bonding to try and support a robust capital investment package in addition to the standard capital budget that's there for fiscal year 23. And we also sought to avoid any deficit draws from savings accounts or, you know, anything that would exceed the 5% of market value draw limit on the earnings reserve.
We have a question from Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, Director, can you go over sort of what, and maybe this might come later on the slides when you start talking about the capital budget, but your definition of a robust capital investment, what that means for Alaska?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, we have, you know, in the order of $700 million in state funds directed in the capital budget. That includes both your traditional match, general obligation bond issuances, use of surplus in fiscal year 22, as well as some targeted uses of the discretionary federal revenues. And so that's what I mean by, you know, a robust capital budget, just because it's a larger investment than we've seen in prior years. We proposed a somewhat similarly sized capital investment last year, and ultimately had a larger capital budget enacted last year than in the couple of years prior. But this would be, you know, a step up from that, really trying to make an investment in capital to position the state well to compete for coming infrastructure dollars.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. By having a bond for capital, the state incurs more debt. And the previous slide showed us to be pretty skinny. And that's even taking into consideration COVID money. So in future years, when we have this new debt payment and no COVID money, how are we going to pay down that additional debt from the bond?
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, in the 10-year plan that OMB produces, We included the cost of debt service should this geobond package be passed and approved by the voters. It's just shy of $23 million. That's included in those projections out. And while the 10-year plan does, you know, based on the December 15th revenue forecast, show a deficit for a number of years, ultimately the gap between expenditures and revenues are closed over the projection period. And so we feel it is a prudent and manageable amount of deficit over that time period.
Follow up?
How does the administration propose that we pay that gap for those several years until it closes?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, during that time period, we would be using the state's primary savings account, the constitutional budget reserve. However, over that time period, it does dip slightly below $1 billion, but not below $900 million. And so there's still adequate money in the constitutional budget reserve during the projection period for needs of cash flow management for the state, or to access in the event of some kind of fiscal emergency.
So we'll get into the 10-year plan, but what I'm hearing you tell us that it'll be somewhere, CBR will be somewhere under $1 billion. It's mid-range above that, several hundred million. My understanding, that includes the education fund. So then you'd be planning on liquidating the education fund into the operating budget to maintain that $1 billion. So we'll have that discussion coming up. And there's some concerns about that and the size of our liquidity position or savings. You can refer to it either way. And there's no savings component in this process here. So we're going to have those discussions at the table. How do we want to position the state for the next downturn in oil prices when, if oil prices goes to $50 instead of 80? So we're going to be taking a look at this from several angles. So I hope the committee members will keep a open mind on drawing conclusions until we lay out what's coming at us and have some of these discussions. Because there is also on the bond package, I'd like to add, it's highly unlikely that the legislature would pass the bond package as is. If we did pass a bond package, I'd expect it to be double to triple that size, because we haven't had any input into that yet. So there's significant concerns on, one, should we even do a bond package? Is it even prudent to finance them that direction? And then, two, the size. So there's just some of these points I thought I'd mention to the committee members that the staff's been working on and starting to lay out for us in the future, being the next several weeks. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So I just want to make sure that I understand, is that according to what you've stated today, the administration is intentionally for the foreseeable future advocating and publishing a deficit spending plan starting at least next year, fiscal 24, because you stated it was going to take a few years of deficit spending and then they'll eventually converge. So is the administration advocating a deficit spending plan for the foreseeable future?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we're not advocating a deficit plan. What we're projecting in the 10-year plan is that without any other policy changes in the next several years, there would be a deficit. We chose not to include, significant budget changes in the next several years in our 10-year plan, just simply because, they are things we'll be working on, but we can't identify them. One question that came up a lot last year with our 10-year plan was that there were, projected reductions in the out years that were just targets and goals, but didn't have specifics behind them. And so we did not include those in this 10-year plan, because even without, specific reductions in the next, year or two, the plan still converges back to balance by the end of the term and doesn't draw the savings down beyond a level that we think is manageable. And so we were able to present a 10-year projection that was a little more policy neutral than we had last year, based on projections of revenue in December.
So you have a follow-up? Okay, so on your first bullet point, the constitutional amendment has no, it's not an operating budget issue here. Clearly that's a political statement, but the 50-50 split, it's another issue. We'll be, in our presentations and comparisons, we'll be looking at the statutory dividend, which is on the books, and what that looks like and what it impacts. Clearly, we'll be looking at a 50-50 and possibly other combinations of percentage splits with the dividend. So I just don't want the public to conclude that we're not going to look at the statutory. We are going to look at the statutory dividend and look at the impacts of that versus other, you know, the other options, 50-50 or whatever other number the any committee member wants to look at, so we can get a feel for what we have coming at us over the next few years, because we have to fix the structural deficit. We can't pretend it doesn't exist. So go ahead and continue on, I guess, to slide number four.
Slide number four is a more detailed look at the revenue available for both fiscal year 22 and fiscal year 23. The numbers in the table represent the December fall forecast from the Department of Revenue. However, 2 days ago, the Department of Revenue did release updated revenue projections for fiscal year 22 and 23 that were considerably higher than the amounts listed on this slide. They're down in the very small print footnote at the bottom. But just running through these numbers, you know, these are probably, you know, better explained by Department of Revenue how they're derived. But there are a couple of things to highlight. We touched on briefly the carry forward and adjustment section. So carry forward is a normal thing that you see, you know, in every fiscal summary produced for the current fiscal year. It's just appropriations in prior years that can be used, or appropriations from prior years that can be used in a future year, and just adjusting revenue to account for that. The very large amount you see on that row, the $1.25 billion, is appropriations from CARES Act, CERSA, or ARPA that were made in prior years and carried into 22 that are available for use there. So that's where you see a lot of that COVID relief money. But the two things that are new here on this chart in the adjustments are undesignated savings, and that was direct appropriations made in the fiscal year 22 budget from the statutory budget reserve. And so we're showing that here as a adjustment to revenue because it was a direct draw from savings in order to cover budget costs. And then we're also showing the federal revenue replacement, which are federal funds able to be used as unrestricted general fund, and they were appropriated as unrestricted general fund in the operating budget in fiscal year 22, and again are proposed for use in fiscal year 23. So the adjustments that were made by the Department of Revenue 2 days ago would add about $280 million in fiscal year 22 and about $467 million in fiscal year 23, which would change those bottom line numbers slightly.
Do you have any questions on this slide? Okay, we'll go to the next one.
So slide five is looking at the expenditure side of the fiscal summary, and breaking down kind of the broad categories of expenditure in the state's operating budget. So at the top line for operating, we're up about 2% from fiscal year 22 to 23. Primarily that comes from statewide operations, and most of the statewide operations increase comes from fund capitalization, which is where oil and gas tax credits are appropriated. Those oil and gas tax credits in fiscal year 22 were appropriated below the statutory amount, and in 23 we're proposing the full statutory amount, which is $199 million. And so that represents a considerable increase from 22. The other big change in statewide operations is on the debt service line. That reflects a full appropriation of the school bond debt reimbursement program at 100% of the statutory level. In agency operations, you can see this broken down between formula and non-formula. Well, there is a $13.8 million rounded out to 0% increase in overall agency operations. This primarily comes from agency formula, and that primarily comes from the Medicaid program, where we have been benefiting from an enhanced federal participation, which right now is set to expire at the end of this fiscal year. So $45 million of UGF needs to be added to the budget to account for the expiration of that enhanced federal participation. In the non-formula, this is your day-to-day operations of state government, of the departments themselves. We see about a 1% reduction. Primarily, this is related to a reduction in contributions to the retirement system from the strong earnings that system held, which now get reflected in the operations costs. And that offsets several specific investments being made in the operating budget in areas of public protection. On the capital budget, you do see a reduction, as I mentioned a little bit earlier. There is a larger than the recent history capital budget in fiscal year 22. The fiscal year 23 capital budget is really a baseline capital budget accommodating matching funds and the core federal programs. The capital package that we're putting forward is not as reliant on fiscal year 23 revenues, but it's looking at using other mechanisms to support capital spending.
Okay, if we can back up a little bit, I've got some questions on this slide, but to tie that in and try to get some numbers that don't move around at the end, I want you to explain to the committee the revenue update concept that you guys plan on going forward with, and how you perceive the legislature being the appropriators, staying in agreement with the revenue numbers that we're to use, and the timeline that you're going to give us those updates on.
Chair Stedman, the Department of Revenue, based on the considerable change in oil price from when they produced the fall forecast to now, felt it prudent to give an update because that price had changed pretty significantly. And so they released that update 2 days ago. So OMB, for our tables here, we're still utilizing the official fall forecast, but we're also trying to note that more current information, just so that the committee and decision makers have access to current information when it changes significantly. I think the Department of Revenue could give you a good breakdown on why they're making that change and what their plans are for if there's more significant changes in revenue, either positive or negative, what the schedule of updates will be. But they'll also be releasing, on their normal schedule, the spring forecast, which usually comes in the March time frame.
Okay, so let me rephrase that, put a finer point on it. And for those watching at home, the revenue forecast we're talking about is from 1st of July, runs through that next fiscal year. So we're quite a ways away from the end of the fiscal year budget we're working on. 18 months or so. So there is a degree of inaccuracy in our revenue estimates, because we just don't know what oil is going to, oil prices and to a lesser degree volume, but particularly the price, from the 1st of July this summer clear to the end of next year from June. So I don't think there's any concern with the administration updating the oil price scenario between December 15th, when you release the budget, and here we are in January. Recognize that you've got to put the budget together in November and first part of December, get it out by the constitutional requirements. We understand that, don't have any issues with that. And then knowing that numeric for the oil price is so far out in advance in December when you release it, Department of Revenue would give us an update sometime in March, first part of April, normally, and by then we're three quarters or so or more through our budget process, but then we fine tune the budget numbers at the end. And that's been an agreed upon process between the appropriators, the legislature, and the administration. Those are the numbers we're going to use. So we use the fall numbers in the beginning, and then the spring forecast when we finalize our budget. And some years, there's downward pressure on oil prices, and we can expect, you know, the budgets will be squeezed a little bit, and we'll use open-ended language on some areas, so you know, the budget can flow through that next winter, and you know, and maybe even through that whole fiscal year. And then some years there's potential for the oil price to increase, so we're going to end up with a little bit of surplus, and we'll put language in there where it flows into the CBR, or maybe it flows into the SBR, or wherever. The concern I have is we have no agreement with the administration. There's been no conversations with the appropriating folks on using updated prices outside of those 2 points. And I'm not talking about the current one that you guys just did. That's within reason. No problem. We're just starting our process, right? So there's no issues with that. But there is issues when you start changing numerics around at the end of the budget process, and you run the risk of the other body using different revenue numbers than the administration. You also run the risk of the Senate Finance Committee using other numbers than the other body or the administration, and then we'd have no agreed numbers of what the budget revenue is targeted to be. And I think we need to rectify that. The administration runs the risk of us not using your numbers at all, which we don't have to do. We can do our own projections, the legislature. And we have taken great strides over the years, no matter who is the governor and who is in the legislature, that we use agreed upon process and agreed upon numbers. So then we might have differences of opinions on the surplus or the use of it or deficit and the magnitude of it as far as what, you know, how long it's going to run or what have you. But we don't argue about what the oil price is. We don't argue about what the oil production volume is presented to us by DNR. We take that stuff off the table. My concern is the administration has now put that on the table, and it's going to be a bunch of static, and there's a significant amount of members within the legislature that don't understand the budget process, especially the newer people. It takes a while to grasp some of the stuff because it's complicated. There's a lot of moving parts. And you always continue to learn the longer you're in the building. It never ends. That's the complexity that we're dealing with. So I'd like you to explain to the committee why we're moving away from that, and I'd like you to explain to the committee why there was no input from the asked for by the from the administration to the legislature on such a significant change in how we want to structure the working relationship when we put a budget together, so we can agree on some of the numbers.
Chair Stedman, yeah, I can tell you what, you know, the rationale given for the change was. I think you would need to talk to the Department of Revenue, who produced a revenue forecast, for kind of the extension of your questions. But I can tell you that the reason that a new release was given 2 days ago was because of how significant of a change there was in the revenue forecast.
That's not the issue. You're missing the whole point. My understanding is there could be revenue updates, at some triggered amount, 10% over the change or what have you. I'm not talking about the fall forecast. I'm not talking about your current change. I understand that, and I think that was a good move, at the beginning of the cycle to say, look, we've got dynamics in the oil markets that we didn't anticipate, so, we're going to update your beginning price number and adjust our numbers. That's not an issue. The issue is at the end of the cycle, budgetary cycle, when you give us a spring forecast, we use that number that you gave us now, not a problem. We'll use whatever number you give us in the spring forecast. That's not a problem. The problem is when you start changing that number after that fact. And that's what we run the risk of. And that's what we need to clarify.
And Chair Stebbins, what I'm trying to say is that question would be better posed to the Department of Revenue.
Okay, we'll bring the Department of Revenue back. And maybe have it both sit at the end of the table. Because we have got to agree on what the numerics of the oil production is and the price. And if we don't, we bring in our own guys to do our own analysis. That's the problem. You can't have the legislature using different numbers than the administration. And you cannot have the House Finance Committee and the Senate Finance Committee and OMB all using different numbers. So we've got a substantial structural issue we need to deal with early in this session, so we agree on how we're going to work it, and I recognize that revenue on occasions when things are moving at the end will it looks like you're going to have more revenue or less revenue, and we put these windows in the budget to deal with it, so the money will either flow into savings or flow out of savings, to backfill expenditures when the revenue runs short. And you know that because we've standard language. So we'll move on, but I just want to make sure that is on the record. And I think this issue happened several decades ago, and it was a mess. And that's why the legislature and administrations have always agreed. And we don't tell you what the oil volume is going to be, and we don't tell you what the price you're going to give us is. We'll take a look at it to make sure it passes the test, the red face test, and then we just move on. And then we argue about the expenditures and stuff like that. So it just creates creates static and confusion within the budgetary process. And we're spending quite a bit of time here trying to unravel that and make the budget as transparent as absolutely possible so the public can understand what's going on with their money and why we're spending X amount of dollars on whatever we are, so it's understandable. So that being said, let's go move on to slide number 5. I got a couple questions there, and I'll let Senator Von Imhoff.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think it might make sense to ask perhaps Commissioner Lucinda Mahoney to come to this table to explain what her plan is with the Department of Revenue on the frequency of updating both bodies, perhaps, on if there is a 10% change, whether it be up or down on a monthly or however frequent she deems necessary. Perhaps we should just ask her that question and work it out. But I also have another question, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay, so on this slide, if the department does predict a spending deficit going forward, and you have identified, a change of oil price increasing cash to the state treasury, are you going to advocate at all about putting any money into savings in preparation for the future years? It would make sense to me because we have significantly less money, this budget is less money towards retirement, which is very worrisome to me. And no money to go towards savings at all to replenish the CBR. especially when there's a plan of a deficit spending in the future. So what are your thoughts on the fiscal conservative approach of not spending every dollar that you have that comes in, but instead putting it in savings account for the future?
Through the chair, Representative Von Imhoff.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Sorry, Senator Von Imhoff, I apologize. The plan here before you, based even on the more conservative fall forecast, would put about $170 million into the CBR. That surplus line at the bottom line would sweep into the CBR, sit in the general fund and sweep into the CBR at the end of the fiscal year. So there is, you know, some amount of money going into savings. If revenue holds at the updated amount that Department of Revenue put out, you know, a considerably larger amount would end up in the savings account based on the budget proposed today. So it's not to say there is not, you know, money going into savings. You know, while it may not be a direct appropriation to the savings account, you know, the mechanisms in the Constitution to repay the CBR are there and move that surplus into, you know, the state's primary savings account that we've been using.
So this is assuming that inflationary costs of higher health care, higher insurance, and higher COLAs doesn't eat your lunch in the spring, which is a big concern, and that the administration is able to seek the reductions in the various different agencies and departments that we're going to be talking about here shortly in the future slides, that you're actually able to see those reductions. So it's still a very much of a moving target.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the budget numbers here include all negotiated cost of living agreements for salaries, all the salary adjustments and adjustments to healthcare costs, and the actuarial determined contributions to retirement are all included within that $3.9 billion agency operation number. So there's not uncertainty there of, you know, those changing into fiscal year 23. The contribution to healthcare has been determined and included in this budget. While there may be some bargaining units still in the negotiation process, you know, will accommodate those when it's negotiated.
Mr. Chairman, this budget underfunds retirement by over $100 million from last year to this year. And I'm sure we're going to learn reasons for that, but I think that that's a very risky maneuver, in my opinion.
All right, we're going to take a look at that. We've made a couple mistakes historically dealing with the pension and health care obligations, where we've had some good years and then underfunded it going forward and sunk the funds, and particularly TERS in the late 90s. I turned it upside down for several decades in the tune of billions. So this is not a minor issue, so we'll take a good look at that. I'd like to talk a little bit about school bond debt reimbursement. As I recall, there's 100% school bond debt reimbursement in this budget, which is, I think, good. There has not been in the past. I know this committee's been very adamant about full reimbursement, and also rural school component of that. It ties into the school bond debt. But my understanding is, going forward in your 10-year plan, you go back to only funding half of it. Is that correct?
Chair Stemmen, that's correct. In the fiscal year 23 budget, because there's revenue available to support a full payment of the school bond debt reimbursement program, as well as the REAA fund deposit, which is, you know, tied by statute to that school bond debt payment, we have 100% payment in 23 because there's revenue available, and that provides relief to municipal property taxpayers. In fiscal year 24 and forward, because in our projections we show a constrained revenue environment, we would go back to that 50% reimbursement level if that, you know, revenue projection, you know, made in the fall holds.
Some of us are concerned about the rural school component and rural schools being left behind because of the political decision to not fully fund school bond debt reimbursement in the statutory link between the two. So I've asked the finance staff to go back look at what it's going to cost us to catch up on full school bond debt reimbursement, and to hold harmless the REA schools. So we'll have that number. We'll look at it, talk about it. The committee will decide what they want to do with it going forward in the budget. But I thought I'd mention that to you so you know, you can prepare whatever you want to prepare. But we'll have that discussion as one of the component parts of this budget. And I don't know what those numbers are off the top of my head. So we can all ballpark them, but we'll put a finer point on that. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Just to dovetail on your comments there on our rural schools, you know, I think we have 6 regional boarding schools. They haven't had an increase since 2015. They're 100% underwater on their student costs because of the increase of fuel, food, housing, COVID, having to keep those kids there. They're upside down, too. So,
yeah, we'll take care of that. So, and I got another question, and that's on revenue sharing. My understanding is you fund revenue sharing, but you don't fund the program up to $90 million. So can you explain to the committee what they should be looking at and the nuances of how you're dealing with revenue sharing?
Chair Simon, the community assistance program is funded with $30 million deposit, which is a statutory calculation out of the Power Cost Equalization Fund waterfall, as it's called. The earnings in the Power Cost Equalization Fund were strong enough last year to support the entire waterfall. So you both have the program itself funded, the $30 million statutory deposit to community assistance, as well as the other energy programs. So we met the statutory obligation, but did not fund above that.
Okay, so you funded at the minimum level, statutory level. So we'll take a look at that also, and what it takes to fill that back up. We've done a lot of cost shifting from the state to the local level, and I want to make sure we understand the magnitude of that, and then it's a decision if we want to do anything about it. But we want to understand that. We have other questions on the high-level slide number 5. We will speedily along to number 6.
Slide 6 is looking at balances of savings accounts. The two primary state savings accounts are the statutory budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve. The statutory budget reserve had a deposit of about $481 million made in the end of fiscal year 21, but then appropriations out of 410.7, leaving about $70 million in that savings account. The statutory budget reserve is available via just simple majority appropriation. The constitutional budget reserve, on the other hand, is constitutionally limited to a 3/4 vote appropriation. And that balance here you see begins FY22 with a balance of just shy of $1.2 billion. And based on the budget proposal and the fall revenue forecast, would end fiscal year 23 with a little over $1.4 billion. However, it's important to note that that beginning balance in fiscal year 22 is a pre-audit number. We used a pre-audit number here because we needed an estimate of the amount swept due to the provision of the Alaska Constitution, Article 9, Section 17D, or the CBR sweep. That amount is estimated at $490.4 million swept into the CBR. That number is going to change once the audit is released, but this is the best information we had at the time of producing the slide. One thing to note in our fiscal year 23 budget, as a result of that sweep and the lack of what previously had occurred of reversing the sweep in the budget, since that reverse didn't happen, we needed to support some programs with additional unrestricted general fund than normally would happen in the budget. And so you'll see throughout the budget $33.6 million in UGF added to agency operations to ensure that programs that were reliant on funds subject to the sweep are fully supported, and to ensure that those programs have certainty in funding as the administration and the legislature kind of work out this financial and account structure in a sort of post-sweep budget world.
Senator Wilson and Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair. So, what is the administration's position on the sweep this year in terms of sort of the cluster that last year have caused, the audit complications that I'm assuming it's still ongoing, and just sort of the status of where you would like to see this to come to, where, I guess not you, but where the administration would like to see this sweep issue come to a resolution?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, you know, the way we approached building this budget was to make sure that the operations of these programs were supported out regardless of, you know, the discussion. We see this, you know, the discussion around the sweep is, you know, fundamentally a discussion of the financial structure of how we fund state government and how these different designated funds exist. We see that they're based on the actions of, you know, the budget that was produced last year. You know, there's probably a robust conversation there that needs to happen about, you know, the different funds. There are, you know, some funds, as we, you know, work through this process of, you know, finding that $33.6 million, you know, there were some of those funds subject to the sweep where, you know, there was no offset needed because revenue every year for several years into the fund was always sufficient to support the program operations. So maybe that fund wasn't as necessary, but others where, you know, there's, you know, some revenue instability that had to be offset with general fund. And so there's, you know, likely a conversation there that needs to happen, but, you know, in the intervening time, you know, we want to see those programs supported in the budget, and that's why we've applied unrestricted general fund. Whether or not there's a reverse sweep added to these budgets is definitely a legislative consideration, and, you know, we're willing to have that discussion.
I guess to follow up.
Oh.
With that, then, I guess my question would be, you know, does the administration would like to see a reverse sweep happen or not happen in the future ongoing years? And then sort of what is the lost opportunity cost? I didn't really see that related in yesterday's with the Department of Revenue or within your upcoming budget in terms of the revenue that some of those accounts made.
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, you know, as funds get swept to the CBR, if you're asking about, you know, investment earning, lost opportunity cost, I think is the question that you're asking. You know, there's definitely different investment outcomes in the CBR than there were in some of these funds. So that's definitely something to consider as we look at it. But, you know, in terms of the opportunity cost here, it's, you know, $33.6 million of UGF that we had to use out of the budget that otherwise would have come from designated funds. And so there is, you know, an opportunity cost within just the bottom line UGF number in the state's operating budget.
Follow, Senator Von Imhoff, are you done, Senator Wilson?
Yeah, that's fine.
No, I think there is an opportunity cost. As I recall, it's $20, $30 million a year. There's no doubt about it. And we'll get into that here in a minute, but, you know, we might as well not beat around the bush. It's a lot of money that ends up not coming in the door. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So looking at the Constitutional Budget Reserve, I think Chair Stedman alluded earlier that I think a large chunk of that, about roughly 400, is the Higher Education Fund. And I understand that there is a lawsuit right now challenging that particular account being sweepable and being put into the CBR, similar to the lawsuit of the Power Cost Equalization Fund that actually did win, and it has now been deemed a standalone account. What is the administration's plan if the Higher Education Fund lawsuit prevails and the money is put back into its designated fund?
Through the Chair, Senator Von Imhoff, if that were to occur, you know, that would be, you know, roughly $25 million or so in unrestricted general fund appropriations that could be moved back to designated general funds, and about $400 million that wouldn't be swept into the CBR, reducing that end balance in 23 to roughly $1 billion. That would be the outcome of that, but I can't really comment much more on the pending litigation.
So,
as a quick follow-up before you do your follow-up, what's your recommendation on the minimum account balance that the legislature should start being concerned with the CBR as their main savings account?
Chair Stedman, so the state needs, you know, roughly in the order of $500 million of cash on hand to just manage cash flow needs. But really, target balance for the CBR, we look at about $1 billion as, you know, getting below that starts to get uncomfortable.
Correct. I think a few years ago, it was a couple billion. So we've definitely lowered that down to a billion. And Senator Von Imhoff's point is, if the higher education fund is not sweepable, we're at our minimum balance, comfortable balance within the CBR with no cushion for any downward movement in oil prices. That's the savings component concern. So we'll be talking about that. Senator Bishop.
You covered what I wanted to say.
Okay, and the other point I'd like to, just for Senator Wilson, we are doing some background work on the sweep issue. That'll be in front of the committee here with the auditor when the audit report comes out. I'm expecting the tactical maneuvers done by the administration last year with the sweep not to pass accounting muster. I don't see how it can, frankly. But I might be wrong. I'm not an accountant. And in the event that it does not pass the red face test, then we'll be having a conversation about how we rectify that. And my guess, it's going to end up in court. So we're going to take that one step at a time. But that would definitely change these account balances. And that gets down to the timing of the, and what is swept and what's left behind for the FY22 budget. So what ended up happening is what should have been the FY22 fiscal mess of 30 some accounts was kind of slid to the background for a while. Has not gone away. But we frankly need to wait for the auditors, and then we're going to probably have dueling legal opinions, and we'll be in front of a judge. And I'll bet on the Finance Committee on that one. So we'll work through that process, but that is also underway. I don't know what the court's going to do with the higher education fund, but I think it'd be prudent for the Finance Committee to stress test that and look at the CBR with and without it and the funding, so we kind of know what the impacts could be either way, and, you know, proceed accordingly. I think it would not be prudent for us just to assume one outcome on that or the other. And also, there's discussion amongst members to reconstitute that if it is swept, and that can be reconstituted with other funds. So the legislature has not taken the position, the majority of us, to liquidate the higher education fund. So that's going to be a discussion also, the reconstituting that balance. So anyway, we'll proceed through these issues as we go forward. But on the reverse sweep, we're basically have to wait for the CAFR to come out. I'm expecting it to have all kinds of red flags in it and be quite the mess. And we'll spend some time here unwinding it at the table, and then collectively talk about what we want to do. And just one quick note on that. The objective should be to minimize the discrepancies within our audited financial statements, to have a clean set of books. And that we've had trouble the last several years, as those of us on LBNA know, clearly the chairman does, she's sitting here, that there's been far too many red flags within the audit. And my concern is we're going to add another 30 or so to it this year. So, and we won't know until it's released, because the auditors won't tell us any more than they tell anybody else. But the handwriting's bold print on the wall. So anyway, we'll work on those issues. And then, Mr. Steininger, but one of the things that we'll also be talking about here is what account balance in the CBR, not should we have above the billion? We've got to be prepared for when oil prices go down to $50, $60 at least. At least recognize that's a high probability, because we all know they swing. And not just leave it to the next governor and the next legislature to, oh, well, they can, you know, they can have the mess. So we're going to, you know, work on some of those things here. We'll go on to the capital budget. Slide number seven.
Slide number seven, I just briefly want to touch on the capital budget. I don't have detailed slides on it here. Primarily, my slides are on the operating budget. However, the capital budget, we have sort of a strategy with capital budget. We have a baseline traditional capital budget in the fiscal year 23 proposal of $157.4 million in UGF, matching to $1.4 billion in Fed. This is your traditional like state transportation or village safe water projects, your traditional capital budget, recurring match, and you know, core state functions in the capital budget. Additionally, we've utilized some of the projected surplus in fiscal year 22 for additional capital projects that totals about $93 million in UGF. These are projects that will benefit from expedited construction. We're also looking at this kind of as a phased approach in preparation for infrastructure dollars coming to the state, trying to get projects out earlier so that we can get contractors committed. And then next coming in would be the geo bond projects, about $325 million, which, you know, can't move quite as fast as a normal capital project because they do require approval by voters, which wouldn't happen until the fall 22 general election. But that would be the next phase in getting capital commitments out throughout the state. And then, you know, infrastructure dollars are going to trickle in over the next coming years, a little bit slower than the, you know, kind of normal state funded capital projects. So we see this as a way to prepare Alaska, you know, for infrastructure dollars coming in and make investments in an area where, you know, the capital budget has been fairly low over the past several years, you know, last year excluded.
Senator Bishop and then Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Steininger, you said earlier that this 157 UGF match, that's kind of your baseline, because it's my understanding, you know, we're still waiting for guidance coming on federal dollars yet, infrastructure dollars, airport, aviation, water, wastewater, broadband, the whole gambit. We still are waiting for match numbers coming forward and guidance coming forward. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, that's correct. Similar to ARPA last year, it's taking some time to get guidance out of the federal agencies that are, you know, trying to understand the infrastructure bill itself as well.
So the $93 million UGF for 22 surplus, is that in a supplemental?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, those are in, or they are supplemental appropriations in the budget that was put out on December 15th. We'll also have the normal supplemental bill that's due to the legislature on the 15th day of session that covers more of, you know, kind of a true shortfall type supplementals. But we included supplementally funded projects in the December 15th bill.
Then in the geo bond financing, we again, you know, last year we took those projects to Senator Bonimoff's earlier comments and Senator Stedman in this table, we chose to pay cash for those projects. They weren't our projects, they were the administration's projects. And so we didn't have this reoccurring $23 million of annual debt service going forward. Just briefly looking at this geo bond package, it's a 325 and it's, you know, it's just a starting point. I get it. You put the numbers down, but there's $195 million right in South Central. Nothing wrong with that, but it lacks a little equity for the rest of the state. So I understand it's a starting point, as Senator Stedman says. If it did come to pass, it would have a tendency to get Christmas treed. I'm still of the flavor of paying cash as we go. I just feel that with the infrastructure dollars that are coming, we're going to be stretched, and I think we're going to have plenty of funding and plenty of work for the next 5 years. And just the last thing on these GL bond packages, as you mentioned, they got to be approved by the voters. There's some of us that sat at this table that voted for a GL bond package. Even though it's approved by the voters, authorization for bonding is still, some of those projects are still 8 to 10 years before they hit the street. So that's hence why I would advocate for GF to get the projects out now and instead of waiting 8 to 10 years. There's a historical documentation. You can go back and look at that, and you can look at those projects specifically. So that's my comments for now, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to get too much into the weeds on budget, capital budget. I know we'll have hearings in the future, but there's one omission which I just have to ask about in the governor's proposed budget, and that was the Port of Alaska, which, as you know, is a national strategic asset. It is critical to our national defense. It provides 90% of the goods that come into the state go through the Port of Alaska. The governor had funding for other ports, including Port of Matsu, and yet there was no funding for the Port of Alaska. And I'm just curious why that was, when it is literally on the verge of failure, one earthquake away from falling into the ocean and denying access to 90% of Alaskans the goods that they need every day.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. The port project that you referenced as being for the Port of Matsu is actually a project spread between both, you know, Matsu and Anchorage ports. It's not specific to one or the other. It's looking at the idea of the entire region's port infrastructure, including both, you know, Matsu and Anchorage. And so I don't think, you know, characterizing it as no money for that port in Anchorage, I don't think that's a fair characterization of the intent of that project.
Follow up?
It specifically says in the budget, Port of for Matsu, but I guess we'll deal with that when it comes. So I'm glad to hear that, if that was labeled incorrectly in your budget. It's one other point, Mr. Chairman, and that is just on a GO bond financing. And I guess I would just sort of echo the comments of the co-chair of the capital budget, and that's on workforce. What I'm hearing is with the billions of dollars in federal funds we're getting in, we're going to be stretched, and I'm going to want to hear that we have the ability to have people actually work on these projects if we do fund them. And I hope there's some sort of analysis when ultimately that comes before us. Thank you.
On that, Senator Bishop, you want to talk about our conversations on that?
Just a follow-up to Mr. Steininger, isn't it your backup on this $175 million for this port work? Doesn't that say Port of Anchorage in your backup?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, it does.
Thank you.
Conversation I've had with Senator Bishop as we talk about the capital budget and the operating budget and the process at the table and how we want to go through it. One of the component parts we want to talk about is workforce development, which gets to your question, Senator Wilikowski, to try to ensure that as many Alaskans get those jobs as absolutely possible and they're trained. So that'll be something that the committee here will be considering and working on. We want, you know, our young Alaskans to have the opportunity to work and stay home and have the skill set to be hired, regardless if they're from where they're from in Alaska. So we'll have those conversations. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steininger, deferred maintenance, what's the future plan for that? Is that to use some federal offset for some of the future funds that we're going to get, or to use those federal funds to offset other funds to free up to do deferred maintenance?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, in the capital budget that we put forward, we utilize the Alaska Capital Income Fund for deferred maintenance, which is the statutorily designated use of that fund. So we're continuing to kind of follow the same method that we've used in the last several years of using the balance in that capital income fund for deferred maintenance needs in the state. And we can definitely bring forward a more robust discussion on the current deferred maintenance backlogs that we're facing and what's been funded from the capital income fund over the last several years. We've definitely seen some success in using that and kind of taking a statewide view on deferred maintenance. We've established a council across all state agencies that ranks those projects and determine the needs, but we can bring you more information on that.
I guess as a follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that we're just looking for the future years, the next 5 years, where we're projected to have an increase of some federal funds that would help offset some of the items already on that list. Is that something that we're going to continue to use the Alaska Investment Fund for, or just continue to use these federal funds to offset?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, if there are, federal opportunities through whether it's the infrastructure bill or something else that could address maintenance needs, we'll definitely want to investigate those and take advantage of any we can, because anything that allows us to either replace aged structures or bring them into working order is positive for that backlog of deferred maintenance.
On Senator Bishop, you have a question?
Just a comment, you're accurate in your comments, but we should try to at least meet the 1% replacement rule in our budgeting on deferred maintenance.
On that, again, there's preliminary discussions I'm having with the co-chair and over coffee cups with some of you guys and gals. We talked about doing trying to get a geographical representation of deferred maintenance around the state. Is it all, mostly concentrated in one area or the other or several pockets or what have you, so we can kind of get a broad view? And the same with capital expenditures over the last several years, so we don't look at it in just, a one-year window. Because we're coming out of a dip in oil prices and revenue, and we want to find out what's, been left behind that we need to catch up on and clean up. So we'll be having those conversations along the way too when Senator Bishop is ready to have those with the capital budget. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Sometimes we don't really think about capital. We think about capital bridges and ports and things of that nature, but what about capital investments like an electronic upgrades? So time cards, applications, even death certificates, anything along that line can be done electronically via the state, as well as electronic upgrades for security. Because we've had a security breach we saw with DHSS this past year. So is there in the bond, in the plan, anything about a thoughtful transition from paper to electronics across the different departments, small, medium, big projects in that nature?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, yes. So we've got a number, so some off the top of my head, probably not comprehensive here, but we have money to invest in electronic medical records through the Department of Health and Social Services. We have a proposal for a student IT system at the University of Alaska to better process that work. We have a proposal for bringing state data servers into the cloud. We have some IT security proposals within the operating budget. This is by no means comprehensive, but I can bring you a more comprehensive list of that when we discuss capital.
Okay. Yes, I thank you, Mr. Chairman. Definitely would like to see that list. I think that's where we're going to see some of the greatest efficiency in the government in terms of being able to quickly process applications, whether it be doctor's licenses, whether it be liquor licenses, whether it be Medicaid applications, whatever. I also know that the university is looking to have an updated, and I don't know if that's part of your budget or the university budget, but to, when you apply to be a student, I think there needs to, I understand that they're seeking an upgrade so we can streamline that process. It hasn't been upgraded for 25 years, something along that line.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. Yes, that's, I believe that's part of the, I believe we're talking about the same project, the student IT system at the university.
Thank you. Okay.
Yes.
Any other questions before we go on to the next slide? And Mr. Steininger, don't worry if we run late. You know, we'll have you back Monday morning for 15, 20 minutes to finish up or whatever, so don't feel rushed. We enjoy your company here.
Thank you, and I always like something to look forward to as well. So slide 8 is a graph that should be familiar to everyone. It's called the SWOOP graph. It just shows relative sizes of state departments. Normally this graph looks the same every year. However, there is, you know, a couple interesting things here. Since we are proposing to split the Department of Health and Social Services into the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services, we have an extra bar on this graph. And retirement payments, because of the good returns in the retirement system and the changes made by SB 55, direct state assistance to retirement has moved from the fourth bar down to roughly the ninth bar here on this chart.
Just before we get into questions, I think what we should do, maybe we'll get maybe on to the through the next slide and then stop, because I think that there'll be continuity in the slides that follow, and I want to give OMB our undivided attention when they get into their cost drivers and issues that they see in individual agencies and stuff. So I don't want to rush that part. We have on the SWOOP graph, we have any questions, concerns, Senator Von Imhoff?
I just want to say thank you for including the permanent fund to provide the visual of how many billions of dollars that the state has paid and is proposed to pay this year compared to everything else. It's a data point. It's for people to interpret however they wish. But I do appreciate you putting it up there, and thank you.
It is nice to have it here that OMB and Ledge Finance will have similar charts, and we're going to have to have them restated. So, and it's good to see the magnitude difference of all their agencies, regardless of the permanent fund issue on it, just the scale. A lot of people don't recognize concerned with the scale. We have any other questions on this page before we go on to our last page for this morning? And
I'd just like to add on the SWOOP graph before we move off of it is we've had extreme weather events throughout the state, and all of us that are elected officials in those areas of the state, I fielded numerous phone calls. I just, want finance members to look at DOT's UGF spend and look at public safety's UGF spend, and you can draw your own conclusion there. But those roadways have got to be plowed for those troopers to get to those vehicle accidents, et cetera, fire safety and health. And we're behind the curve and with DOT, with maintenance and operations.
We'll look at that in the budget process. One other quick comment I want to make before we go on to the next slide and finish up, because I forgot to mention it on the savings components. Several years ago, when we started building surpluses and we talked about savings and where we're going to put the money in this, as we built up billions in the CBR, we forward funded K-12 a year in advance. And I think we should have that discussion again to see if the cost benefits of doing that. It was a very successful. It's unfortunate that it got liquidated fairly early in the budget squeeze. But that's another component part that we need to have on the table and discuss. We'll go on to page number 9, and then we'll conclude with this.
So page number 9 is looking at agency operating budget changes that build to the $13.9 million increase between fiscal year 22 and 23. So first, there's built-in cost drivers of about $108 million. There's, in the 22 budget and the 23 budget, there's use of a lot of one-time federal monies that can be used for things like, you know, road maintenance and airport maintenance in the DOT operating budget. But just making the technical adjustments for what was available in 23 required the addition of about $11 million back into the DOT operating budget. There's also a Medicaid increase. This is primarily a result of the expected expiration of the enhanced federal participation rate for Medicaid that, you know, currently is going to expire on June 30, but may well be extended, so that number may change at some point in the future. We have some adjustments to central services rates. These are rates that primarily Department of Administration charges out to other state agencies that require some UGF in the agencies to pay for. Also, salary adjustments. These are the cost of living adjustments negotiated with bargaining units. There's $13 million spread across the state agencies. The sweep impacts was a built-in cost driver that we had to accommodate first when we were starting to put together this budget. And there's about $1.1 million of other, you know, small changes up and down. They're just kind of baseline as we go into budget development. After that, we have agency budget reductions, the largest of which is the use of federal infrastructure dollars for the Alaska Marine Highway System operating budget. There's a five-year program in the infrastructure bill that supports operations of rural ferry systems, of which only two states qualify for the program, and it's $200 million per year on a national level. So that allows us to put together a marine highway system budget that is almost fully supported by federal dollars and allows that fare box recovery to, you know, be collected, but isn't necessary for the operations of the system. So there's only $5 million of state funds necessary for marine highway system in 23. We also have a reduction in the education formula, the K-12 foundation formula. There's another slide later that we'll get to that has a breakdown of the, you know, student count changes that result in a reduction in the formula, but this does still represent full funding of the statutory obligation. We touched on a little bit earlier PERS, TERS, and SB 55. There's a $44.5 million reduction in agency operating budgets as a result of the actuarial determined obligation to the retirement system funds. And then there's about $12 million roughly of targeted savings throughout agencies. Then we also made targeted investments. There's $32 million in public safety initiatives and about $11 million in resource development and primacy initiatives that, again, on later slides, there's more details on what goes into those numbers.
Okay, so let's start with this slide on Monday morning. You can, you know, go through that again because it kind of sets up the following slides. It'd be a good place to stop, I think. And then when we're done with OMB, we'll go into ledge finance, and so it might spill over for a little bit into the afternoon on Monday to try to stay on schedule. We'll just play it by ear. But I'd like to thank everybody for coming today. Appreciate OMB coming forward with information and all the work, hard work that's done in the background to put these documents together. They just don't materialize out of thin air. Thank you for that, and see OMB Director Monday morning. And then this afternoon, well, let me just stop there for a second. I'm going to have a brief Eddie's. Chairman is so enthusiastic about having meetings. We thought we were going to have one this afternoon, but it's Friday. There's no afternoon meeting. Monday morning, 9 a.m., finish up OMB, start with legislative finance. a little different view of the budget, and then we'll start our budgetary work as we go forward. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.